One of the most cliched introductions in all of talk media is the statement, "My guest needs no introduction." In the case of this week's installment of the podcast you're about to hear, the cliché certainly does apply. Actually, it applies three times over, as I'm about to present a conversation I had with three outstanding guests from the worlds of business, media, and politics. All three of these colorful individuals are connected through their work at the legendary New York City radio station, WABC. One is the CEO and owner of Red Apple Media, which owns the station, and an extremely prominent businessman and former politician who also hosts talk shows on the platform. Another is the president of Red Apple Media and one of the most dynamic radio managers in America. And the third, last but not least, there's another cliche, is a talk show host on the station who's also a former mayor of New York City. The conversation was recorded on Monday, September 13th, less than 2 days after WABC presented a very extensive, informative, and impressive series of special live programs commemorating the 20th anniversary of 9/11 this past weekend. Our guests this week are Red Apple Media President Chad Lopez, WABC talk show host and Red Apple Media CEO John Catsimatidis, and WABC talk show host and former mayor of New York City, Rudy Giuliani. Welcome to the Michael Harrison Interview, the weekly podcast from Podcast One for media freaks, pop culture aficionados, political junkies, and the philosophically curious. Thank you for downloading this program from Podcast One, Apple Podcasts, the Podcast One app, and Spotify, and for following our Tuesday tweets announcing the names of our weekly guests. To sign up, it's at MH Interview. I can be reached directly via email at michael@talkers.com. If you find this show to be of interest and value, please subscribe to it as well as giving it a positive 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Okay, here we go. An uninterrupted conversation with Chad Lopez, John Catsimatidis, and Rudy Giuliani. It's pretty daunting to talk to one person in an interview situation, especially when you're not in the same location. To talk to two can be very challenging. In this case, to talk to three, with a three in one location and I'm elsewhere, can be absolutely daunting. But I'm up for the task, especially with the luminaries, the heavyweights that we have as our guests. So I want to welcome here as we just came out of a very, very exciting weekend of radio, very important weekend of radio at WABC, the 9/11 coverage, 9/11, 20 years later. Well, now it's 20 years and 2 days. We're recording this on Monday, September 13th, as we look back at a major broadcasting event covering, obviously, a historical event. With us is the CEO of Red Apple Media, the company that I believe less than 2 years ago, I'm not sure now, time goes so fast, acquired WABC in New York. And he's a talk show host. He's certainly a businessman of great renown. And he is a major broadcasting figure now, John Catsimatidis. And John, hello to you. I'm glad to be talking to you again. Hope you're well.
Well, I know we talked last year, and we bought WABC. We closed on it right in the beginning of the pandemic, March 1, 2020.
It's funny how things like that work out. So you ushered in a new chapter in your life and a whole new chapter in the world. Sitting next to John, I assume, is the president of Red Apple Media, who came into that project with a tremendous list of credentials in the broadcasting industry from the marketing and managing side of things. And he is now the president of Red Apple Media and also a gentleman I've had the pleasure of knowing and talking to, Chad Lopez. Chad, congratulations to you on a fabulous weekend of radio. You must be very pleased.
Yes, thank you, Michael. It's great to be on with you again, and I love what you do for radio and for the talkers portion of radio. So thank you.
Thank you very much, and this is going to be an interesting conversation. And rounding out, and if I may pull a cliche out of the air, last but not least is a man who has adorned the title America's Mayor for more than 20 years now and is a talk show host at
WABC, internationally known figure, and the former mayor of New York City, Rudy Giuliani. Rudy, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
Very nice to talk to you, Michael.
I believe this is the first time I've had that pleasure, so this should
I look forward to it.
As a matter of fact, I want to jump right in real quick with a question from you, Rudy, and then I'm going to bounce around up and back, and I have kind of an agenda in mind to use this time as wisely as possible. So considering so many people listening to this are talk radio fans, how does it feel? How have you integrated into being a major talk show host now on a daily basis on a big station in a place that you certainly can call home in New York? How's it going and what's it like?
It's wonderful. I mean, I started it during the pandemic almost as a special. Mm-hmm. And started it at home, and I was trained by Chad. They brought the equipment home. They showed me how to do it. I had done it years ago. I substituted for Bob Grant a few times. I substituted for Hannity a few times. But that's different. You don't have the responsibility for it. But I don't think I would have gotten, to tell you the truth, I don't think I'd gotten through the pandemic without it. Gave me a chance to talk to people. It's something I always did as mayor. Once a week I had a radio show as mayor because I always felt I wanted to hear what people had to say, not just the polls. And now it's an ability to speak out on the things that are of vital importance to you and then to hear what people say, which is very often different than the way it's covered in the newspapers or the television or the opinion polls. When you're on the radio and you're talking to people, you don't just find out this is a 50% issue or a 60% issue. You find out this is an emotional issue. And that's really more important than a 60% issue or a 50% issue. And you get a chance to express yourself at a time in which I believe our country is in grave peril. So I feel this is almost like I finished a day sometimes feeling like I did a patriotic duty.
Wow, that's certainly the goal of it all is to serve the public. And yes, during crisis, and you've been through, in terms of your relationship to communications and the people of New York, two major crises is the one you pointed out, the pandemic, and certainly, obviously, 9/11 itself. I have another question I want to ask you real quickly about the mayor, the role of mayor in New York. I get the feeling, I'm kind of a history buff when it comes to politics, and I'm from New York, I'm from Brooklyn, and I've always looked at the job of mayor of New York as being the closest one could come to being a figure in a small town that's almost as big as being president of the United States. It's in this very unique position. And the great mayors going all the way back to LaGuardia and Jimmy Walker. I remember James Cagney playing that part, I believe. I mean, that, you know, that you're sort of the morning man. It's like being a radio host of the city just by the job. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
How did you feel? How'd you find that to be?
Well, you hit it right on the head. I knew, I mean, I'm a student of New York history. I read everything about it, and including Moses' gigantic opus forever, right, on the city. The people who succeed as mayor of the city of New York are bigger than life.
Yeah.
So if you're not, you better make yourself bigger than life. Mm. And you've got to be all over the place, and you have to be willing to answer questions. So 5 months into being mayor, Newsday did a front page cover. I thought they thought it was critical. I loved it. It had me on the front cover with a microphone in front of my face, earphones on, and they said, "Air Giuliani." And the idea of the piece was I was trying to go around them by being on the air all the time, being on radio, being on television. Well, they were absolutely right. I wanted to go around them because I could deliver my message directly to people without their distorting it, changing it, making it fix their ideology. You know, I wanted people to work for welfare. I knew immediately when I said that they're going to paint it as mean Giuliani wants people to work. I wanted it to be, I want you to work the way I want my kid to work because I love you. Because if I don't leave you with a work ethic, I just left you destroyed.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, they don't love you. They don't really give a damn about you. You're just a number and a vote. To me, you're like my son. If I can come out of this job having putting hundreds of thousands of you to work, I will feel like I'm a very successful man. If I have the same damn ridiculous unemployment rates that Dinkins gave me, I'm a failure.
Yeah. Well, they're going to study history for years and years and years over the nuances of politics and the execution thereof in terms of the juxtaposition of Dinkins' administration into your administration. And it was a tremendous transition. I wish I had hours to talk to you. Maybe someday we'll have a longer conversation about that because it's important stuff. I'm going to go to you now, Chad, and we're going to save John as the anchor man in terms of the first opening questions. Because you were the only person, from what I see, that didn't or doesn't do a regular show on WABC. So you can give us an objective overview for those around the country and the world listening. How did you break down? How did this whole thing go, this 9/11 20 years later, from Friday, September 10th at 6 a.m. all the way through Saturday, 9/11? What'd you guys do?
Well, you know, one of the things in our last interview, the podcast that we had done, was when you'd asked me, why did John Katsimatidis choose to buy WABC? And the whole reason, his vision was to give the truth, nothing but the truth. However, let's make sure we're staying relevant and we are talking to all communities and groups in New York City and across the country. That's the only way anyone's going to listen. And, you know, when John had the idea of it's 9/11. On 9/10, the days leading up to it, you know, and also on 9/11, those are important days for remembrance. And so he said, you know, let's just break programming here and let's start coverage because there's a lot of people that would want to be remembered. And also the country, it's important to the country that we don't forget. And that was the whole reason.
I love the way you just use the term, let's break programming here. I wish more people in radio realized that breaking programming is part of programming.
I actually use that because that's one of John's words. He says, let's break programming. We're not going to do the traditional stuff. We are going to do things differently here. And that's the reason for our growth and what John, you know, come up. I can tell you, you asked me last year, how's my job changed? It's changed for the better because we are staying relevant in anything that's happening. It's not a normal day. We are going to make sure that we're covering everything.
And, you know, you're a big-time operation. You got big-time people, but you are an anomaly now in terms of big-time operations. And as much as there are not 400 stations in the Red Apple chain and 18 vice presidents and, you know, layers and layers of bureaucracy, it's got to be for you still a feeling of I don't want to use the word freedom because we're all responsible, but you're able to be more nimble in decision making in this operation. Am I correct?
That's great. Great word. Nimble. It's exactly what I am. As a matter of fact, being able to sit right next to John and you know, and the decisions made immediately on what we want to do has been a huge, huge part of the success here because John will look at it from not just the business standpoint, but also what does it mean for radio and WABC first? You know, a lot of times when you know this, Michael, when you get into the major corporations, it's money first. And sometimes those decisions that are made aren't the best decisions for the brand. However, here, it's still about money with John. Let's not make any mistake about that. You don't become a billionaire not worrying about money. However, it is more about just the product first for him and also how is it being delivered. And if we deliver the right product, he always says the money will follow in the ratings.
I agree with that. I think that it's important to have the money be part of the equation because the capitalism is based upon exchange of money and how people have the opportunity to use capital, et cetera, et cetera. The money is a part of it. Where it goes wrong, in my opinion, if I may interject my view, is when the love of money and the lust for money outweighs the ultimate base of responsibility.
Exactly.
That comes with the privilege of being able to have a big platform, whether it's licensed or not. I believe having a platform, a megaphone, requires responsibility no matter what. Mm-hmm. And, John, you were on the air. We're running a picture of you in Talkers today where you're surrounded by Rudy Giuliani and George Pataki and Bernard Kerik. I mean, it was the leaders of the pack.
But you're also bearing the lead here, Michael. The Cardinal Dolan. I mean, come on. Did you see that?
I cannot keep up with the parade of personalities that are coming through this radio station.
After the press conference we had, Cardinal Dolan comes in and blesses all of us. And Rudy says, can I get forgiveness?
I want a concussion.
Cardinal Dolan says, I don't have enough hours.
That's certainly in the spirit of camaraderie. And I guess, Rudy, one cannot take oneself too seriously in this in this world, huh?
You need a little bit of humor.
Oh, my gosh.
Without a little bit of humor and a little bit of sarcasm, life gets very boring and... I would turn off the radio if we didn't have it.
So let's talk about you not only turning on the radio and making the radio a turned on medium, but you're evolving very rapidly as a talk show host in your own right. And that's unusual for someone who has the position of CEO of a major broadcasting company to also be in the trenches. You were doing that before. Your Cats Roundtable has done very well in a number of markets beyond New York as a syndicated property, and you've gone on now to have a podcast version of that. You have the Cats at Night show every day in that same afternoon block with Rudy and with James Golden from the Rush Limbaugh group. How are you feeling about your work in the trenches as a personality and a voice on the radio?
Well, to go on every day at 5 o'clock between 5 and 6 is not as easy because, you know, we're busy running 7 different companies Monday through Friday from 6 in the morning till 5 in the afternoon. At 5 in the afternoon, after we run 7 different companies, got to go downstairs to the studio and do the one-hour show and be prepared for it. Telling the truth, getting the truth out, to me, is very important. It's the most important thing that people will tune in because they'll depend on you that you're going to tell them the truth. You're not going to tell them a bunch of BS coming from any particular direction. And what I tell people, you know, living in New York, I am pro-common sense Democrats. I am pro-common sense Republicans because if you have common sense, then I respect you. If you're just nuts on the right or nuts on the left, I have no respect for you.
Well, how do you deal with the fact, and Rudy, you can chime in on this as well, but John, we'll start with you, that I have a sense of my audience, and I have a sense of audiences, and I know out there are people rolling their eyes and going, yeah, you have the truth according to you. We're at a time now where even those things, as the Declaration of Independence said, we hold these truths to be self-evident. Well, I find it very difficult nowadays to get a consensus on even the truths that are self-evident. How do you deal with this desire to tell the truth, which I believe you're very sincere about, and the fact that it ain't so easy getting through to people about what you consider to be the truth? John?
Everybody is invited to come on to my show, whether you're a Democrat or you're a Republican, and I give them the opportunity to speak. In other words, coming onto my show, they have respect for me and respect that I'm not just going to attack them. I'm going to give them the opportunity to have them say the way they feel about things.
And that is unusual. A lot of shows these days just preach to the choir and are afraid that their core audience will be angry that they put the other point of view on. Rudy, you're out there in the marketplace of ideas big time. I mean, this has been a hell of a year for you. How do you handle the fact that no matter what you think the truth is, there are a significant number of people out there who will not believe you just because of whatever your label is or where you fit within their scheme of things?
Well, I've dealt with that, you know, for a long time since I started representing Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Up until then, I was a Republican. I was actually a moderate Republican and probably lost the Republican nomination in '08 because I was too socially liberal a Republican, like an outsider. But I have always been a very conservative Republican about foreign policy, and I've always been a very conservative Republican about economic policy. So I get the more the issues become, for example, what Biden did in Afghanistan, the stronger a Republican I am. The more the issues become, he wants to spend now $3.5 trillion on top of already increasing our budget by 28%. Nobody increases budgets by 28%. He's ruining our economy. So those are the issues that get me then very, very Republican. But then attaching myself to Donald Trump, I attach myself to the man for whom there is a sickness in this country among certain people. They have Trump derangement syndrome. I mean, they really do. They've gone, whatever you think of Donald Trump, good, bad, in between, he is not the devil. He's not what they have built up in their head. And when you look at the condition of the country, just think of this. Look at the condition of the country today under nice Joe Biden and the condition of the country 2 years ago under mean Donald Trump. So,
well, I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole.
Well, I'm going to tell you.
That is a rabbit hole.
I'm going to tell you. That's the reason why people hate me and love me.
Mm-hmm.
When I meet people on the street, they come up and they tell me, I love you. I love the way you supported the president. I love what you stick up for, what you believe. And the other ones come up to me and say, how did you change? And I try to explain to them, I haven't changed.
Mm.
This is my view of the truth.
Right.
Everything I have said, I can back up by documents, witnesses. They just don't want to hear it. So,
all right. Well,
I've always based what I do on a test my father taught me. I wake up in the morning. When I come time to shave, I take a little pause, and I say to myself, "Am I doing the right thing about the controversy?" And sometimes I'm not. And if I'm not, I change, I call my friend, and I apologize. And when I believe I'm doing the right thing, I don't care if it's the New York Times or I was a lot more right about the New York Times, about New York City, than they were. If I did what the New York Times wanted me to do for New York City, I've got all the editorials to prove it, the city right now would probably be finished. Wouldn't even exist. We'd be so overwhelmed by welfare, and we'd make sure.
Well, that bounces back to what I said earlier about the juxtaposition of the Dinkins administration and the Giuliani administration. And it's interesting you say certain things make you more of a conservative Republican, other things moderate Republican, whether it's foreign affairs or the economy. Clearly, you're a major historic figure when it comes to the science, the art, the political science. Criminology of dealing with crime in an urban area. And a case could be made that you're an example of why a city the size of New York, the unwieldiness of New York, the transient nature of New York, the nooks and crannies, the infrastructure, the dark alleys, the complexity of New York, which is ripe for chaos if not run in an orderly way, you're a great case for why a traditional, conservative, tough-on-crime administration is necessary, whereas in a smaller city, a different place in the country, a different situation, it could come across as heavy-handed. So I'm not asking it as a question. It's more of a comment, a reaction to that.
Yeah, you know, it isn't exactly that. Crime in New York City has to be dealt with. You don't have to deal with it any more harshly than in a small town. It's probably dealt with a lot more harshly in a small town than in New York City. I mean, in a small town, you have a little marijuana, you go to jail for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
In New York City, we don't pay attention to marijuana. The reality is New York City had to have a business approach, a scientific approach to crime. And that's what Bratton and I and Safer and Carrick brought to it, the CompStat system. We evaluate things based on statistics, not guesses, not politics. We try to find out the best facts we can about where is the crime being committed, who do we have to have there. That scientific approach to crime is what brought it down. And that's what made us prepared for 9/11. We spent 7.5 years preparing for 9/11. We didn't know 9/11 was coming that way. We knew bin Laden was going to attack us from 2.5 years. We were preparing for that guy attacking us. We thought he would attack our stores. We thought he would attack our churches. We didn't think he'd use airplanes as missiles. But because we prepared so much, we were just a lot more ready for it than any other place.
Mm.
And our heroes performed. Oh, my goodness. I mean, I don't know if there's ever been a more heroic operation in the history of the world.
Yeah. Politically, a lot of historians say that Michael Bloomberg probably never would have been mayor of New York had it not been for 9/11 and specifically your endorsement at the time. Any thoughts about that?
It's true.
Okay.
You always get straight answers from me. It's true. He would have lost by 15%.
I might have been mayor if you didn't endorse my opponent.
Okay, you don't always get it right, John.
I mean, John, have you thought about that? I mean, obviously you have. It's funny how fate, you know, an event sets into motion a cascade of other events that one would never – it's not just what happens. It's a whole cascade of events that happen.
Well, I was running for mayor in 2013 as a Republican liberal. And Rudy's former deputy mayor was running also in the primary. And Rudy was obligated, because it was his deputy mayor, to endorse him. And I felt I lost to Rudy. I didn't lose to Joe Loda. They convinced me when I lost the Republican primary to get out. But that was a mistake. I still had the Liberal Party nomination that other people have won in the past. And Joe Loda had zero money. Bill de Blasio had zero money. I had all the money in the world to spend if I wanted to run. And I should have ran as a liberal. So between de Blasio, Loda, and Katsimatidis, I thought I might have had a shot. You never know what would have happened.
That's the way Lindsay won.
That's the way, John Lindsay won that way in the past. And it was my mistake that I did pull out. And
well, you know, had you not pulled out, we might not have seen. You see, I view everything from a broadcasting perspective. So I think that the idea that new life and blood and enthusiasm is being put into one of the stations that I grew up with prior to even being in this business to be more important than if you had become mayor. But that's just my point of view.
I grew up with WABC. I grew up with Cousin Brucey. And I wrote the check because I wanted to bring WABC back to number one.
Well, anybody who loves radio is supportive of that effort, and you're on your way to doing that. It's still a daunting challenge, but keep up the good work. Now, I'm going to swing back in a moment. So, Rudy, keep your political head on to talk more about this New York politics and the role of mayor. But I want to get Chad into this discussion because one of the things that is of concern right now to everybody in New York and everybody across the country is the actual state of New York's economic health in the wake of the ongoing pandemic. So, Chad, you have your finger on the pulse of the economy as the manager and the president of the company. How should we be viewing the recovery or just the state of New York's economy and morale at this point in the pandemic?
Michael, that's a loaded question, but I'm just kidding with you. I believe that, you know, when you look at New York and where it is right now, from a business standpoint, it's tough. It's tough right now. I mean, if you were in New York City, I'm sure you've been here in the recent weeks, and you walk down Madison Avenue or you walk down some of these streets, you see a lot of small business restaurants or just even small businesses that have closed up, right? Is that daunting for, you know, and I'm going to speak from just a broadcast professional, is that daunting for broadcasters? Absolutely. Is it daunting for a broadcaster who is in the moment relevant? It's a news talk product. Right. It's not so daunting because people are listening. I believe our consumption just of the station, the listenership has gone up only because of that, because people are concerned about what's happening. And when, as John had stated before, you know, it's the truth. It's about telling the truth. And when John bought the station, his vision was, I want to tell New Yorkers and America the truth, and I want to keep the news down the middle. It's news and views. Our talent has their own views, but the news is going to be credible and it's going to stay down the middle. I think that's really has changed it for us. And what we're seeing as far as just economics, I could tell you that we're beating prior year's numbers. You know that the standard is the Miller Kaplan, and that's where, you know, everybody looks to see what the report card is for these individual stations. And we're doing well. We've beaten year over year, month over month, the Miller Kaplan, and I believe that's because of the content that we're putting out, right? And the distribution of it, understanding how it's just not a regular radio station anymore. It's about audio, and that's what John's vision was. I want to take audio and apply visual to it, too. We just launched Studio 77. John's vision was, I want to take audio and visual and put it out there. I want to make sure that people are not only getting us and hearing us, but they're actually seeing us. And so that coverage for 9/11 was incredible. So if you ask, what did it look like this weekend? It actually felt really good. It almost felt like the economy was coming back if you were in New York City this weekend. It was packed. The streets were jam-packed again. It was blocked off. Obviously, the president was in this weekend. However, I'm not so concerned about where the radio, the station, is going because, again, as long as we continue to put out first-class broadcasting and the right content, we'll be in the right place. So that's my take.
Is your Studio 77 the same studio that I had lunch with you and toured WABC before the pandemic, and you folks had just started the Red Apple chapter, and you were at Penn Station, and you were showing me the studio, which is like a television studio for radio shows, which is tremendous. Is that the same place that you are now?
Yes, it's no, we're not in 2 Penn. What John did was he moved us out of 2 Penn, and we're over on the east side. He literally built the station from ground up. I mean, the studio that we have here now, the technology is incredible. It's Stage 17. It's now Studio 77 on steroids.
Ah, all right. It was called Stage 17.
Yes.
So it's even more impressive than it was when
Absolutely.
I saw it.
Huh. Absolutely. And the way we're putting the content out is even more impressive.
That's fantastic.
It's incredible.
All right. Now, swinging back to Rudy, we were talking before about Bloomberg and John Catsimatidis running and some past history. The name John Lindsay came up. And if I recall, another name that came up earlier was LaGuardia, Fiorella LaGuardia. who ran on a party. I remember my father used to tell me, because I was a kid, it was way before my time, but he used to talk about, there was a word he used that I found fascinating. He said he ran on the fusion ticket.
Correct, yes.
And I've heard you say the word fusion before.
I did. I ran on the fusion ticket too. I ran with two co-candidates, mm-hmm. Herman Badillo and Susan Alter. Now, they ran as Democrats? No. They ran with me on the liberal line, and then they also ran with me on they put me on the liberal line, and I put them on the Republican line. And that was the thought of fusion. And Lindsay had done the same thing. Lindsay had run on liberal-Republican. And LaGuardia had done the same thing, but I'm not sure. The Liberal Party might have had a different name then. But LaGuardia lost the first time he ran for mayor.
Really?
Mm-hmm. First time he ran for mayor, he lost. Not badly, but he lost. A little while went by. He went to Congress. He passed some very, very famous labor legislation, the Morris LaGuardia Act. And then when Jimmy Walker got kicked out for corruption, the city finally, the city votes for Democrats when they're disgusted. When it's like,
well, you're getting into where
Republicans.
That's where I'm going.
The Democrats are constantly screwing up. I mean, they've run the city into the ground. Chicago, 50 years of Democratic rule, 65 people shot, 10 dead this weekend, and then they just keep doing it. In New York, there's a different factor that goes on. Sometimes it gets so bad that the people of New York have an independence and they say, oh, we can't put up with it anymore. And then they'll pick a LaGuardia or a Lindsay or a me. And you asked about Mike. They pick Mike because September 11th knocked the living daylights out of them. And neither Democrat candidate looked like a leader. They weren't sure of Mike, and at that point, the reason I got him elected is only because I was at an artificial 90% approval rating at the time. So, he got my endorsement at the single best time you could ever get an endorsement from a politician.
Yeah, taking this one step further, and you've already answered the obvious question is people say a Republican has a tough time getting elected anything in New York City because it's predominantly Democratic. But you and Michael Bloomberg and in the past others have been elected, and it can be done. You did a show on WABC just the other day during this whole special with Curtis Sliwa, who's a very interesting character that we've all known, and you've known him all the way back, I'm sure.
John, he's worked with John for a long time.
Yeah, exactly, through the involvement with another radio station in New York, so there's been a lot of interbreeding there. But the point is this. Do you think that Curtis has a chance of winning this?
Yes, that's what he has, a chance. I mean, we have to be real with people, right? It's an outside chance. If the experts are not accurately measuring the depth of the anger about what has happened to their beautiful city, if it's greater than the experts think, he could pull it off. But right now, the polling doesn't show that.
Well,
the polling shows that Adams has a pretty good lead. Now, I think polls about 10 years ago stopped being really important. And what I tell Curtis to measure when he's out there, how angry, the angrier they are, the more he has a chance to win. Mm-hmm. Angry about the conditions of the city, crime, whatever.
So you agree he has a chance. I think that's a very...
He has a chance.
Yeah, that's honest answer.
He has a chance, and it comes from things that maybe we haven't measured yet.
Do you have a nice relationship with him from the days when you were mayor and he was a rising vigilante? He's a rising star in the world of vigilantes.
John, we all knew Curtis from back then.
There's right. Nobody that knows Curtis at this time. Curtis knows New York City better than anyone. Would you say that, Rudy?
Absolutely. I know Curtis from 1980. Whenever he did the thing on the Theater Row. Remember, John, when Theater Row was overwhelmed with crime and Koch
knows
did
every
nothing
street,
about it?
Knows every subway station, knows every bus transit line. He knows everything about New York. And I said to Curtis, look, you have 60 days left, just about, a little bit less maybe. You're in Yankee Stadium. You can hit a home run if you do everything right. And if your opponent does a few things wrong.
Right, right.
I think exactly right. When you're behind, it's not just about you, John, right? It's about the other guy, too.
Yeah, yeah. How many times have we seen, you know, using the sports analogy, the guy who trips right before the finish line and the other 100%. Guy cruises across.
Coming into the ninth inning, 9-0 ahead. I've seen some games lost.
Michael, this is Chad. If I can interject for a second here. One of the things, again, with the coverage of Studio 77, we had the Democratic mayoral debate in there, and we had every one of them. So we got to know each of them intimately and hear their opinion.
And the attorney generals and the comptroller's race.
Yeah. And the DA's.
And the DA's race, all in Studio 77, broadcast throughout the city.
Psychologically, when somebody who is a big name in politics or somebody, you know, that you want to get, they call that in radio a get, you know, a great get. It has a tremendous impact when they come to a beautiful studio that looks like a television set or a theater than just being in a studio. I have to tell you, it has just the psychological impact can create a better program. John, I want to ask you something. We didn't get to it before, but I was talking to you and we went off in a different direction about your radio shows. And you're enjoying doing them, but how many shows are you doing now? You're doing the Daily Show, and you're doing a weekend show. Yeah, fill me in on what's going on with your.
I'm doing five shows Monday through Friday between 5 o'clock and 6 o'clock on WABC.
Yeah. You had mentioned that every
and
day you're
on
prepping.
On Wednesdays, we at 5 o'clock we do broadcast with 970 AM and WABC and our FM station 107.1. Sunday mornings, we do various stations in New York City. We do 970 AM and WABC between 8:30 and 10 o'clock. And I get up at 5:30 on a Sunday morning, and we do the 8 o'clock show on 970 AM live that morning.
One of the things you pride yourself in is not only having your own personal knowledge of the issues, but you get pretty good guests. And I guess that stems back to all the years that you've been involved in business and radio. That's a key component to what you do. Am I correct?
You're correct. When I helped run Bill Clinton's campaign back in the 90s, I was at the highest ranking levels of the Democratic Party. And then I became at the highest ranking levels of the Republican Party. So I know both parties very well. And I try to be fair to everybody. I don't invite somebody on our show with the intent of attacking the person. I invite them with the intent that let them speak what they want to speak about and get their views across.
And that's a dangerous way to go sometimes. I find that in my own role in the communications business. I'm not out to hurt anybody. And
well, my instructions to all our reporters, contrary to some of the other stations or cable stations, my instructions are tell the truth. You know, we come from a generation where 92% of the American people believed Walter Cronkite. Right now, nobody believes anybody. Wow. And we got to get, and I've spoken to the Poynter Institute down in Tampa, where they try to teach ethics. And that's an interesting situation. Ethics in broadcasting. At what point do you allow the CEO to order people to tell the truth the corporate way, their personal corporation's way? And that's wrong. And we have to straighten out America in communications because the American people deserve the truth.
All right, let's wrap it up because otherwise I will take this past everybody's bedtime. we're all gonna be here too long. I could talk to each of you for hours. So let's just wrap it up. Chad, have you any final message that you'd like to give the listeners to this based on everything we've talked about? Fill in any of the gaps that you feel we didn't touch base in terms of the evolution of WABC and your plans for the future.
Yes, News Talk Radio is alive and well in New York City, you know, and it's important to the communities and the groups of New York City to hear the news and, as John said, and the views, the opinions of all of our guests as well as our on-air talent. I think, you know, there's a problem, going across the country where a lot of people are being told what they can and can't say. You know, one of the things I think has made John and WABC and us successful here is John allows everybody to come in and say what, as long as it's the truth. And if it's not, it's their opinion, that's fine. We'll figure that out quickly.
And John, do you have any plans to expand the company? I know that you have WLIR, an FM station out on Long Island that carries WABC's programming in areas that the AM signal may not reach. Do you have any plans to expand the company beyond that?
WABC itself is going to continue to expand within the tri-state and area. And don't forget, it's 50,000 watts clear channel. So after dark at night, we're in anywhere from 20 to 35 states. And that's interesting. Creation of new types of material. Don't forget, we have WABC tapes for the last 30, 40 years. We may start a WABC classic network. And we may have Imus competing with Bernie and Sid.
Well, let me tell you something. I think that it's not outside the realm of your possible expansion to be able to be a mini Sirius satellite network. I mean, there's no reason why a radio station that has the benefit of the digital platforms that surround its on-air signal can't have a number of formats. I mean, theoretically, the sky's the limit as long as you can monetize them and there's an audience for them. WABC is a brand.
It's a brand, and we're going to continue to expand our news network as the brand, and we can continue to expand our video television network as a brand. We're also, recently I was part of the Hill in the newspaper in Washington. We are going to start a Washington edition probably.
Well, I wish you the best of good fortune in all of those ventures, because there's so much opportunity to be a pioneer and to set the pace for what media stations are going to be in the 21st century. All right, Rudy, finishing up with you, you got my wheels turning earlier. I wasn't going to get into Donald Trump and all that, but give you a chance to either hit it out of the park or get mad at me for bringing up his name again. If I could have asked this earlier, I would have. Has your view of Donald Trump changed in the last few months?
How about in the last 31 years?
However you want to answer it.
No, he's the same Donald Trump. One of the things the media does all the time, because you see different aspects of people, is you say, oh, they change, and people think I've changed. I haven't changed. I do the things I do for exactly the same reasons that I put Fat Tony Salerno in jail, or Mike Milken, or Ed Koch's commissioners, about half of them. From the time I became an assistant U.S. attorney, I've just got a sense of injustice. And crooks get me angry. And I'm a lawyer. I'm a very, very dedicated lawyer. And I represented Donald Trump just the way I represented 50 other people. And when you get me representing you, well, we fight to the death. Legally, but we fight to the death. And one of the reasons I'm having the trouble I'm having is I was his most effective spokesman. And not any doubt about it. That's why they want me off. I mean, the moment Biden announced, the first thing he did, he sent a circular around to all his pals in the media and said, don't put Giuliani on. Can you imagine that? One person he didn't want on, me. Don't put him on. I have it framed. Boy, you guys are really afraid of me. So I'm going to keep telling the truth. I'm going to keep living by what I've lived by always, because I got the proof of it. And ultimately, I have great reliance in the truth. Donald Trump is the same guy he was the day he walked down the stairs, the same guy he was that I met when he was building the Wallman Rink, when Ed Koch got it so screwed up with corruption he couldn't figure his way out of it.
And there you have it, an uninterrupted conversation with former New York City mayor and WABC New York talk show host Rudy Giuliani, along with two key figures at WABC, the president of Red Apple Media, the company that owns the station, Chad Lopez, and the CEO of Red Apple Media, as well as one of the colorful hosts on the station, John Katsimatidis. Thank you for downloading this program from Podcast One, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and the Podcast One app, and for following our Tuesday tweets announcing the names of our weekly guests. To sign up, it's at MH Interview. I can be reached directly via email at michael@talkers.com. If you find this show to be of interest and value, please subscribe to it, as well as giving it a positive 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. If you're interested in hearing my weekly 1-hour radio show, The Michael Harrison Wrap, check out mhwrap.com. Our producer is Matthew B. Harrison, The Michael Harrison Interview. Thank you for listening.
The Michael Harrison Interview is a presentation of Podcast One in association with Good Phone Communications and Talkers Magazine. Copyright 2021, all rights reserved.